Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today the interview is Mr. Ron Simmons, who is a gold Olympic winner among many other earned awards and trophies. How are you this afternoon, Mr. Ron Simmons?
How are you doing, Angela?
I'm doing great. Good. That's great. So you're an Olympian winner. Would you tell the people what year it was that you became an Olympian winner, and how many trophies did you take earn for the United States of America?
It was 1996 in Atlanta. I won a gold medal, and it was one gold medal.
One gold medal, all right. And what
I've won other medals, but in other countries.
Okay. And what was the gold medal for?
First place in weightlifting.
Weightlifting, okay.
Yep.
That is wonderful. So how much did you lift?
Over 600 pounds. I was in the weight class of 173.
Wow. That's a lot of weight to lift. I know I could not do that.
Right.
No, I'm serious.
Right. Well, it took a lot of training to get to that point.
Gold Olympian, you're Olympian. Now that I think about it, the Olympics are on now, so this is a perfect interview.
Oh, okay.
Perfect interview.
Cool. Yeah.
Because the Olympics are on TV.
Yeah, I've watched a little bit of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'd like to know, how did your career start?
My career start in weightlifting?
Yes. Yes,
it's funny that you asked that, because I had no dreams of going to the Olympics. I had no dreams of even getting into weightlifting. At the time, I was into bodybuilding. And at that time, you know, people came looking for me, wanting me to try out for, you know, the weightlifting team. And I knew nothing about, you know, powerlifting or weightlifting, you know. I was into bodybuilding, and that's two different sports, and they do two different things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the people who told you that you should do this are who got you involved into weightlifting, and that is how you became an Olympian.
Yeah, you know, it was some people, you know, from the U.S., USFA, you know, weightlifting team who had tracked me down. You know, I trained at different, you know, clubs in Chicago. And when they finally tracked me down, I kept telling them, look, I don't know nothing about powerlifting or weightlifting. And they said, well, just come. We just want you to try out for the team, because we had heard that you were a real strong guy. You know, and, you know, I really wasn't into that, and I didn't know what that was going to entail. So, you know, I was just real curious, you know, so, you know, I went, you know, and I tried out, and I
okay.
did good. And I kept telling them I knew nothing about the sport, and they said, "Well, we're gonna train you. We're gonna teach you." And something in the back of my mind just said, "You know, just see where this goes." And that's where it went. I had no interest.
Oh, okay.
I was lifting weightlifting at all. I was into bodybuilding.
Okay. All right.
And matter of fact, you know, I was in the process of getting ready to compete in bodybuilding, and that changed.
For the Olympics?
That changed my direction.
Was it for the Olympics that you were getting ready to
I was getting ready to compete into bodybuilding, which is a total different sport, and it had nothing to do with the Olympics at all, you know, but...
Oh, okay.
You know, getting into weightlifting and powerlifting and starting to train with the team just changed my whole direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of muscles. A lot of muscles. Solid.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that and a lot of aches and pains.
Okay, a lot of aches and pains. Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So how did you feel back then being in the Olympics? And
how did
you feel today?
Man, you know, you know, as time went on, you know, I really got into it. You know, I was this new kid on the block. Nobody knew nothing about me. And then the other thing that was interesting, too, is that at that particular time, you know, I was a vegetarian. I didn't eat red meat or pork at all. And people in the sport, you know, everybody ate meat because that's where you got a lot of your protein from, you know. But I got my protein from a lot of other, you know, other sources and stuff and whatnot. And a lot of these cats who was winning these different tournaments and stuff, you know, I was coming in as this new kid all, you know, all off the block that nobody knew of, and I was beating these cats. And I was getting tested all the time for illegal substance, and I don't believe in drugs.
I understand that. I don't either.
Yeah.
Not illegal drugs of any kind.
No.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. No drugs at all.
Okay. All right. So are you still a vegetarian, and did you remain a vegetarian during the time in 1996 where you were Olympian?
Yes, I did. After all of that, you know, I went back to, you know, eating meat and this and that and the other, you know, and about maybe 3 years ago, I stopped all of that again, so I don't eat those things anymore.
Oh, okay.
And I doubt if I ever will again.
Okay, meat?
No. I doubt if I ever eat meat or pork ever again.
I understand that. There are quite a few vegetarians. I understand why also it's not healthy for your body. I understand that.
Oh, yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
All right. So, are there any other awards that you have earned and been awarded in any other countries or continents?
I won a gold medal when I was in London. I won a bronze medal when I was in Australia. In 1994, I was ranked the third strongest man in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's something else. Mm-hmm. So do you train people these days, you know, here in 2018?
No, back then a lot of people, you know, wanted me to train them, you know, and I wasn't into that, you know, and even to this day, you know, people want me to do that, you know. I've never been a person that wanted to train anyone, you know. I have always given people, you know, information, you know, and in the process of giving them information, you know, I would always tell them, you know, before you do any of this, you know, you need to check with your doctor first.
Okay, I understand
that.
Because
this is different for different people.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
That makes sense. What are you doing currently? I know you have a lot of things in the process, such as films and movie
trailers. Right now I'm working on a feature film, and that's where a lot of my time is tied up in, is working on that project.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Is it a film? It's a film, right?
Yeah, it's a feature film. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, have you had your fundraiser?
I've had a fundraiser in October. We're getting ready to have another fundraiser in March, March the 10th, you know, in Chicago. We're having a big skating party. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you're still famous. You realize that, don't you?
I don't know about all of that.
You don't know about all of that. You paved the way for a lot of people, whether you realize it or not.
Say what now?
I say you paved the way for a lot of people in sports.
Yeah.
The Olympics also, especially the Olympics.
Yeah.
A door opener, you opened the door.
Well, I think the person that opened the door for me was the person that I met back in the 80s, and he's famous. He's no longer here, but he was well-known. He was a well-known bodybuilder by the name of Sergio Oliva. He was Mr. Olympia. He is the only bodybuilder that ever beat Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he was my mentor, and he was one of my trainers.
Oh, wow, he beat Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He's the only person that ever beat Arnold Schwarzenegger. And
yeah,
he was also a Chicago policeman, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but he died back in 2012.
Okay, so he really opened the doors. Okay.
Well, he opened the door for me. Yeah.
He did? Okay.
Oh, yeah, he opened the door for me. He taught me a lot.
So what is your film about Cabrini Green? Did I pronounce it right?
My film is about public housing. I grew up in public housing.
Yes,
my mother raised five children by herself in public housing. You know, and a lot of places that I've traveled, you know, around the world, you know, when people find out that I'm from Chicago and then I tell them what neighborhood I'm from, you know, when they find out what neighborhood I'm from in Chicago, you know, all the things that they would always say was negative things about that area.
That is
true. And I'm saying, that's so far from the truth because I live there.
Yeah, they talk about killings a lot.
Yeah, you know. So the film is really going to be a film that's going to be an eye opener. It's going to be uplifting. It's going to really tell the true stories of how people really lived in public housing and grew up there. And you know who were
the real famous people,
huh?
Including yourself. There are some very famous Black Americans.
Famous people that I grew up around.
And his wife, Miss Oprah.
Yeah, a lot of people that, you know, my mother grew up with Chaka Khan's mother. Chaka Khan was born there.
Yeah,
Jerry Butler grew
up
there. Curtis Mayfield grew up there. Major Lance grew up there. I mean, one of the members of the Shylights grew up there, you know. It's like, I knew all these people.
Yeah, but yet it has a lot of negativity when people talk about it.
Because
the extra in Greenleaf last year, I believe that.
Uh-huh.
I talked to someone, and they said it's not that bad. It's not like they're saying.
It's not.
See,
it's not.
That's what happens when you don't check things out.
Well, the other thing
is
that the area has always been wanted by the powers that be in special interest because of the location, and media can make or break you. And when you don't control the media that's being controlled by special interests, you know, and this and that and the other, they can say whatever they want about an area and make it good or bad.
So what are the special interests, the area that Chicago, Illinois is in? Could you please explain in more detail?
Cabrini-Green is really close to Michigan Avenue, the Gold Coast, rich area.
Okay.
You know, and they have always wanted that area since the 70s. And they recently got that area in the early 90s, and now Cabrini is gone.
Okay. So now they have what they want is special interests in the powers that be, is what I'm going to say, because I know black people have power too. Now that they have that area, why are they still saying this in 2018?
Saying what?
There's still a lot of killings there now that they have the area.
They're not because all of those projects have been, they tore all those projects down. They got condominiums over there. They got new buildings over there, you know.
Okay, all right. So it's a much better place than what they're saying.
Well, about 6 months ago, I read in the paper, they said the best place to live in Chicago is on the north side in Cabrini-Green.
Okay. All right.
They wouldn't have said that 20 years ago.
No, they would not have.
Right.
They would not have said that 20 years ago.
20 or 30 years
correct.
Ago, they would not have said that, you know.
No. And Chicago is mostly black Americans.
Chicago? No.
Chicago is not mostly African American.
No, not Chicago. No, it's a mixed city.
It's a mixed city.
And you have okay. areas that you know, certain groups of people are priced out of, and that's getting worse.
That's wrong. That's just evil.
Mm-hmm.
Evil.
Yeah, we got a lot of evil people in the world.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. It's wrong to discriminate, immoral to discriminate to me.
Yep.
Okay, so you understand, so that's what your film, is it a documentary or a film?
No, it's a feature film. You know, you've had a lot of people do documentaries and have written books about the film, but all of those people that have done those things, those people have been white people, and they've never lived there. Now you're going to get a feature film from someone who lived the life, who lived there, who grew up there for the first time.
All right.
I don't know if you saw Cooley High.
Yes, I did.
You did?
Numerous times.
Cooley High was written by my childhood friend, Eric Monte.
Yes,
you know,
I've
a lot of people think that movie
with him.
Is the. Huh?
I've been trying to interview Mr. Monte.
Yeah, Eric had, he's had a stroke some years ago, and I doubt if you'll be able to interview him on.
Oh, okay, yes, sir.
Yeah, that way, yeah. But the film, that particular film, a lot of people think that film is about Cabrini, and it's not. Cabrini was used as a backdrop because Eric grew up there. That movie was about Eric becoming a famous Hollywood screenwriter. And he left home and went to Hollywood and became a Hollywood screenwriter.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
And he wrote Cooley High. There's another gentleman that you're really good friends with. I believe he wrote Good Times.
Eric Monte wrote Good Times. Eric Monte wrote Good Times. Eric Monte wrote The Jeffersons. He wrote Sanford and Son. He wrote What's Happening. He wrote all of those.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. That, oh, wow, you just told me that. I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's something else, because I still watch some of those.
Yeah.
That, Mr. Monty?
Yeah, Eric Monty.
Mr. Eric Monty wrote Good Times,
mm-hmm.
Hoo Lee High, The Jeffersons,
mm-hmm.
What's
mm-hmm.
Happening, and what was the other one, sir? Was there another
Sanford
one?
Sanford and Son.
Huh?
Sanford and Son, and Good
Sanford
Times.
Sanford and Son. Now, that I didn't know. I did not know
Sanford
he wrote
and Son
Sanford
and Good
and
Times.
Son.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that talented man then, because
mm-hmm.
people are still watching those TV episodes to this
say
day.
What now?
They're on TV. Those
episodes. People
on
are still
TV
watching those to this day.
I still watch them.
Mhm. Mhm.
Yeah, I still sometimes watch The Jeffersons and all those shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of great, rich history that have come out of Cabrini Green, and a lot of people don't know it. But when they see my film, it's gonna rock them.
I believe that.
Yeah, it's gonna rock them.
I believe it. Because I know about current day. I know about you, Mr. Simmons. I know about
mm-hmm.
Ms. Oprah. I know
mm-hmm.
about ex-president Barack Obama and his wife,
mm-hmm.
And others. I mean,
yeah.
You're not the only ones. It's a lot of people that have come out of there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I mean, I know some.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about the other gentleman, Mr. Monty.
Right. Yeah. Do you know who Mary Alice is?
Mary Alice, no, sir. Honestly, I do not. Would you please tell me?
She's an actress that grew up in Cabrini, and she was in Down in the Delta. She was in the Matrix movie. I'm trying to think of the other movie that she was in. Sparkle, the old Sparkle.
Oh, the old Sparkle movie.
Yeah, the old Sparkle. She was the mother of the girl, of the girl singer.
Miss Whitney Houston. Oh,
no, not that one. It's the old one.
Okay.
Yeah,
right,
it's the older one.
Miss Houston, the late great Miss Houston. She could,
right.
Beautiful
yeah, it's
voice.
Not that one. It's not that movie. It's an
okay,
older movie with Philip Michael Thomas.
Okay. So okay.
From Miami Vice.
Oh, okay. I remember Mr. Thomas from Miami Vice. I do.
Right. He was in the movie The Old Sparkle. And Irene Cara was also in the movie, too.
I remember her.
Right.
I remember her.
So the mother of those girls. Yeah, the mother of those girls who were singing is Mary Alice.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. It's nice to know those things.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's nice to know, to have more knowledge about people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I honestly did not know that. So I have to go here.
Mm-hmm.
As a black man and an athlete, because I still consider you an athlete to me,
mm-hmm.
because you won the Olympics and you the gold medal for America, and
mm-hmm.
you did so many things, so many wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have to ask is, what is your opinion about Mr. Kaepernick in the NFL and his being fired for kneeling?
I think what he did, I would have done. I think that we need to use whatever platform we need to stomp out any type of brutality or racism, because we don't control those mediums. We don't control those mediums. So when you get a platform like that, and you want to take a stand on racism or police brutality, you use it. I would have done it.
Yes, I believe he did the right thing too.
Did the right thing.
There are some people who are commenting, you know, and saying that, well, he's not employed. But the point is, he took a stand.
Yeah.
He wasn't afraid to take a stand.
Sometimes,
and I think it's very
racist in
what
life,
he did.
Sometimes in life, everybody's not going to agree with you, and sometimes you may have to take a stand and take a stand alone when no one else will stand with you. And I have no problem with doing that. I've done it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stand for something.
Got
to stand
for
something.
Mm-hmm.
Are you foul for anything?
Right. Yep.
Mr. Kaepernick has not been hired back. I think that's just for the racism.
Yeah, you know,
I
look at those kind of institutions as gatekeepers. And if you think about it, in a different way, it's almost like slavery.
Yes, it is. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It is like slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what makes other people mad, other races of people mad, is that people like me have always known it, have always lived it. You know, growing up as a child, I've always lived it.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes them mad when other black people from other parts of the world, instead of here in little town that I'm in Florida, that they find out that everybody knows, and you can't hide it. You can't put it in the closet.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Right.
It's out in the open. And I know I saw Mr. Jay-Z's interview, the rapper Jay-Z, on YouTube, and he said, and I agree, you know, with a lot of what he said, the YouTube video, and he was also on the CNN show of Mr. Jones, I believe is his last name, and, you know, he was talking, it made a lot of sense, the things he was saying. So, yeah.
Well, we need to think about empowering ourselves more.
Yes,
because
we do.
Have the power.
But black people don't want to do business with other black people. They say they're looking out for their pocketbooks. They're looking out for themselves.
Yeah, but we got to, that's that slave mentality, though.
Yes, it is.
That's that slave mentality that we have been conditioned into for decades, and we got to get out of that.
Because the other races of people are not doing anything for the Chinese aren't either. When you go to the hair salons,
they're not doing what?
They're not. The Chinese don't. Like when you go to the Chinese restaurants, get your nails did, buy hair or nails or whatever you're going to do in this Chinese run, they don't give anything back to the community, and a lot of whites don't either.
And that should be the wake up call.
Yeah.
I talk to people a lot about this. Is that black buying power is $1.6 trillion a year, and none of those dollars come back into our community. And if we stop spending our money into those places just in a month, a lot of those places would close. And we start pooling our dollars together and start building up neighborhoods that are bad. You see what changes that will start to happen real quick.
You know, the sad part is, with the criminal justice system, it's not justice to me. A lot of black people that are in prison, have been in prison, were there for crimes that were small, that weren't violent crimes. To me, they were not, but everybody's got their own opinion. It's overwhelmingly populated with black men and women.
Well, that's the other part of keeping us down as a people.
Yes.
And the people who are out here, who are free, need to free themselves. all those nationalities that you just named, all of those nationalities, they have an economic power base.
Yes,
Blacks
they do.
Don't. Blacks don't have an economic power base. So how can you come to the table and demand or debate with anybody about anything if you don't have an economic power base? We don't have one. Our money
racism.
Is,
go ahead, sir.
Our money is spent with all those people that you just named. So when you look at those neighborhoods are built up off of our black gold.
Yes, sir. You're
know?
Right.
So
you're right.
We got to start building a new Black Wall Street.
I just did a show with Black Wall Street. People don't
trust
that either.
Yeah, we need to think about building a new Black Wall Street.
I did a show about that.
And it's not impossible. It's not impossible. It's more easier now than it was back then. It's a lot easier now.
But the complication is this. People marry who they love. You get what I'm saying? And sometimes that person is of another race.
I'm glad you brought that up.
They don't want to offend the ones they love.
Say it again.
What the Bible says, you leave your mother and father, you marry your wife and husband.
Mm-hmm,
they feel like they're fulfilling their vows. You cannot help who you love. So when you have an interracial relationship,
that?
I don't that you can't help who you love.
Right.
In a way. But I personally, in a way.
Yeah. In what way is that?
It's not necessarily something I would choose, but I can understand what love is. Since I've been in love before.
I don't think anybody, love has no color.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, love has no color. It has no color. My family bloodline is not totally black.
There's anyone that's totally black anymore.
No,
especially
it's not.
Since slavery.
It's not. I have white relatives to this day that I'm close to. I have Puerto Rican relatives to this day. My great-grandmother was a slave. And her first child, my Uncle Ozzie, was by her slave master. And we loved Uncle Ozzie. And if you saw my Uncle Ozzie, you say that's a white man because he looked at white. And during that time, he came to my grandmother and he said, "Mama, I want to talk to you about something." And during those times, you wasn't going around telling people that you was half white or half black. And he said, "Mama, how would you feel if I went out in the world to live my life as a white man?" And she said, "Baby, you go out and do what you have to do in order to survive. Your family will always love you." And my Uncle Ozzie went out and lived his life as a white man. And he always came to family functions.
Okay. I understand that. So what is your opinion about the criminal justice system and the unfairness of it and the
racism? It's been unfair.
Privatizing the prison.
Well, it's been unfair from the time that they put it on the books, because it was planned to incarcerate people of color, and mostly black, because that's another way of making money and getting cheap labor. It's another form of slavery. You got a lot of innocent people that are in prison and in jail. have been and have died there and did nothing.
Okay. All right. So
and
like
the only way that those things are going to change is that we have to change our mindset and start trusting in one another. Or these things will continue, or it will get worse. Because just because you're okay don't mean that you're going to be that way forever. Because, number one, look in the mirror. Someone asked me some years ago, have anyone ever called you the N-word? I said, no. I said, but I know some people that they have called that. I say, but if they call them that, they called me that because I looked like them. So just because I wasn't called that to my face doesn't mean that just because a friend of mine was called that, that it does not affect me. It affects me.
Yes, sir.
Because I'm a black man.
Plenty of sense. I have been called that.
You have been called that?
Oh, yes, sir. I've been called a gorilla,
yeah,
too.
Yes.
But I don't hate anyone. I don't hate any race of people.
No, I don't either, you know, but, you know.
And I can't help that I'm black. This is the way I was
born.
And to be honest with you, this mostly happened all my life because I'm in a small southern town. Sometimes things are better, sometimes they're not. Last year wasn't a good year.
Right.
The election of Mr. Trump and and just taking it back to slavery or trying to here in this town, this county.
But people are fighting back
with their civil rights, and they're nearly getting killed for it, or being intimidated some kind of way. Go ahead,
well,
sir.
We as black people, we got to rise up and start trusting and protecting one another.
Yes.
And, you know, and if we don't do that, those things that you just spoke on, those things will continue, and it will continue to get worse.
In this town, this is a southern town in Florida. I'm like 30 minutes from Alabama state line.
Yeah, I don't like the South at all. My great grandmother came from Yazoo, Mississippi.
No, sir. No, sir. You wouldn't.
I don't.
Like,
I spent a lot of time with my great grandmother talking about go to the South.
If you are dark. Brown, black. I mean, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're used to freedom,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to work out too well for you.
Especially
the smaller the town is. The smaller the town is, the worse it is. Birmingham, Alabama may not be as bad as a smaller town in Alabama. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
No, I already know. My great grandmother told me many years ago, "Never move to the South."
Okay, all right.
I will never move to the South.
I was born here in the town that I'm in.
Yeah.
But there are interracial couples here. You know, they don't seem to have a problem.
Yeah.
Except when they get arrested, then there's a problem.
Okay,
and I'm not racist.
There's a secret society that's around, that's hidden, and they can do certain things in certain places. And when they get the opportunity to do that, that's when it comes out.
Yes, sir, it is. That is true.
I mean, if you look at what happened to Rodney King. If you look at what happened to Rodney
King, it's been repeated a million times at least.
Yeah, but I'm saying the videotape, you know, it's like all those police officers got off from that.
Yeah, and they've been getting off ever since. They didn't kill him,
but
they nearly did.
No, and now you're getting killed by him. Now you're getting killed by him, and they're still getting off.
Yes, they are.
You know, and I'm gonna say this, all police are not bad, you know, because I got a lot of police friends, and I got family members that are police, you know, but that system, those systems need to be overhauled because you got rogue cops that's been there for decades that cares about nothing but corruption. And that needs to be washed out. Because there's not a whole lot of people that I know who trust police officers.
So
when I was growing up in Cabrini, we didn't call the police when we had problems. We dealt with our own problems because they would never come. And then when they did come, you know, it was over with.
Okay, that makes perfectly good sense.
Yep.
So I have a couple of more questions, and then I'm gonna let you go. Lynx Productions.
Lynx Productions is a production company that I own, that I've had for a number of years, where that we manage talent, we book acts, and the film company is also up under Lynx Productions.
I've worked with Angie Stone.
I've worked with Shaka Khan. I've worked with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. I've worked with Mavis Staples. I mean, I can go on.
Yes, sir. So I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
You're considered a black man that has made it here in the United States of America. Do you believe it's like that for all black men?
When you say a black man who has made it, what does that mean to you?
You got past discrimination. I don't think
I've gotten past the discrimination. I think when when you set out with dreams and ideas, you're going to have all kinds of obstacles. And my mother instilled something in the five of us, is that, you know, you're going to be told no. You're going to have obstacles, but you push right through those things, you know, and continue on.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Okay.
Because a lot of people tend to give up because they're being told no here, they're being told no there, or they got somebody over here saying, you can't do that, or you can't do this, or you can't do that. I didn't have time for that. And, I move in a small circle, so I don't have a lot of negative, you know, that kind of stuff around me.
Yes, sir, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
That makes pretty good sense. That makes good sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's going to conclude the interview unless there's something else you would like to say, Mr. Ron Center, Mr. 1996 Olympian winner, gold winner.
I appreciate that answer. I appreciate you reaching out to me and wanting to interview me. You know, I don't do a lot of those, you know, I'm honored that you wanted to do that with me.
And I'm honored that you graced my show with this interview.
Oh, okay. I appreciate you.
I really am. When was your last interview?
My last interview was with Soul Train some years ago.
Why did you stop doing interviews? You've been busy.
I'm not
with your
a
company?
Real good interviewer.
Yes, you are.
No.
Yes, you are.
And, I'm also a shy person. A lot of stuff that I've done a lot of stuff behind the scenes. I've never wanted to be in the limelight and still don't.
Yes, sir. Okay. All right, then. So we're going to end the show, and thank you once again.
All right. Thank you.
Ronson.
Yes,
all
right,
sir.
Andrew,
God bless you.
Take care.
You too.
All right.